You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
So Scott, you're kind of the running the show on this one, right?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, so great. It's,
you want me to go ahead and start it then?
You're whenever you're ready to go.
Okay, I'm gonna count it down.
Oh my god, we're doing that again now.
Yeah,
that's not going to become a thing now, is it?
It's been a thing for me for a while.
Oh, which so thing, you mean? Which thing? What happened is we used to be on another network called Southgate Media Group, and there was this podcaster that we did shows with, a guy named Jesse Jackson. And every time when he was like officially starting the show, he always did this 3-2-1, and he did that so that when he's editing, he knows right where to put the bumper or the intro music.
Mm-hmm.
And so Scott has somehow adopted this thing. I don't know why.
But you know what? It's kind of useless because we always add on all this, you know, pre-show chit-chat anyway. So
no, because I, you know, to me, I like the behind-the-scenes stuff. But
yeah. Pre-show, post-show, all that good stuff. Anyway, all right. Well, then I guess I won't count it down. I'm just going to
Go ahead. Do whatever makes you comfortable, man.
I'm just going
to – I'm busting your chops.
I'm just going to say welcome.
I'm ready to jump in.
The making of a great compilation tape, like breaking up, is hard to do and takes ages longer than it might seem. You got to kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you got to take it up a notch. You don't want to blow your wad, so then you got to cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules.
12 albums, 1 cent. Find our ad in Sunday's paper. Take it to your mailbox. You'll get a lot more music. You'll get a lot more life. Look in your Sunday paper.
Welcome, listener. For those about to rock, we salute you. This is our podcast dedicated to exploring and talking about the greatness that was the music of the best decade. If you're ready for the best in retro music topics on the planet, we present for your enjoyment 80s mixtape Auto Reverse.
Welcome to another episode of Banzai Retro Club. We're doing one of my things is the 80s auto reverse or mixtape, whichever you want to call it. We kind of focus on music in these episodes. I did a series on, you know, the heavy metal over the years and in the 80s, and tonight we're going to be talking about the new wave of the 80s. So we have a guest with us. That's Suzanne. She's returning. Dave had her on the show a few weeks back, and welcome, Suzanne.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had fun last time, so I'm looking forward to it today.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to that show. I didn't even know that you guys were doing one, and it was really good to listen to you guys reminisce about the 80s. You know, we love – I mean, you know, the Retro Club, we talk about the 70s, 80s, and 90s, but our real wheelhouse mm-hmm. is the 80s. I mean, that's where we tend to stick around. So.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, so – Dave is with us also.
Yeah, you know, better known among B-men as the Artful Dodger.
I'm sorry, what?
The Overlord? That was a little throw out from our previous conversation.
I missed that one.
Yeah, we went
that
back
part of it.
Yeah, we went back a little further than the 80s in the last one.
Yeah, because I think Oliver, which is a musical, Scott, I think actually at 68 even.
I do remember you guys talking about Oliver quite a bit, which I know nothing about.
Yeah, Jack Wilde.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You guys were talking about
the guy from HR Puff and stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's fun.
Yeah, those are really fun shows. The Sid and Marty Krofft stuff.
Yeah.
And, Land of the Lost and all that. That's great times. So.
And I'm glad that previous show surprised you. I didn't tell you that was happening.
Yeah. So, no, I was excited to listen to it.
Something new that you didn't know was going to happen. So that's all good.
Yeah, spontaneity. Yep. Yes. Love it.
So this time around, we're talking about New Wave. And I think one of the things we need to start off with, I'm going to break down a little bit of history first, or at least bring up a little bit of history, and you guys can chime in if you want. So if you look back at, New Wave is it's a large genre, and it became so many subgenres back in the 80s. And I really think it started in the 70s. And you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it really started with like Bowie and Blondie and Talking Heads. And that was kind of the mid to late 70s, right?
Absolutely. Especially the late 70s. I think 1979 was a big year for that, which I have memories from, being a junior counselor at day camp and hearing all these amazing songs on the radio and such. Mm-hmm. But in doing, Dave, you had said that you looked into a couple of the 80s video blogs that I wrote.
Yeah.
I was disappointed to find that a few of the songs in the videos I wanted to focus on were actually from 1979 or 1978, so I couldn't use them. So.
Well, that falls in the retro wheelhouse, but I guess, if we wanted to go, put a focal point, for this specific episode, then it's probably a good idea to stick it in one decade. So,
That was kind of the pre-80s, pre-new wave type of thing. Gary Numan and Joe Jackson and Cars.
And that was all late 70s. That really did fall into late 70s. Gary Numan with Cars, that was 1979, right?
Right. Yeah. Told you 1979 was a big year.
79 was a big year.
B-52s, I think, started coming out with music then.
Like Rock Lobster.
Yeah. That was one of the songs, actually, that I was gonna, I was going to feature, but I couldn't because it wasn't, it was specifically 80s, 80s right. themed, and that predates the 80s. But I think it kind of opened the floodgates.
Oh, yeah. So. I really like how music in general, so many things changed in the late 70s. There were so many new ideas and people just coming up with off the wall stuff that you didn't see coming. When I was doing the whole heavy metal hard rock breakdown, we broke down each year of the 80s and talked about the individual albums that came out that year, our top couple albums or whatever. And I kept thinking, man, how can I not mention that a lot of this stuff came from, Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and those guys started in the late 60s, And
yeah, I guess so.
So it goes on to all these different genres like rock and disco and new wave and pop music in the late 70s just started expanding and just exploded into all these different little branches. So that's where I kind of get into this whole new wave thing. I'm looking at the new wave of the 80s. And I'm like, well, what really was it? What was new wave? Because there's so many subgenres within that new wave title that we know of now. For instance, the goth or the emo type, which emo wasn't even a word back then that I know of. I didn't even hear emo until 5 years ago. But
I would agree. I don't know that you even really heard goth very much. It was just you were punk.
And it wasn't even, I don't know if it was punk, but it was like the darker side of things, like The Cure, they dressed in that kind of that goth manner, that kind of the goth word kind of came into play, I think, more in the 90s probably.
Yeah, definitely. But we called it hardcore. That guy who was dressed in black and had the spider, the black spider hair sticking out all over the place. That guy was hardcore. That's what we kind of called it.
Yeah, and I was trying to think about which other bands kind of fell into that goth or emo, into that kind of thing. And I think even Depeche Mode, even though they had a pretty positive message, they still went a little bit on the darker side and went to that, you know, they had that kind of that feel, that darker feel. And even mm-hmm. though I remember back in high school, now I graduated in 86, so, you know, these bands were all very, very popular when I was in high school. But I didn't like any of them at the time. Like, I appreciate them way more today than I did then. Like, way more. I was a metalhead, so I liked, you know, Motley Crue and Rat and Metallica and all that whole.
You had that long hair? Let me guess.
I didn't have really long hair. I didn't have a mullet until the 90s because it really wasn't that as popular until like the late 80s, early 90s. But I had longer kind of shaggy hair, just, you know, not even shoulder length really. But I hung out with the people, all the guys that had the long hair. I hung out with bands, you know, a couple guys in bands and stuff like that. Anyway,
I mean, with all the setup is like, you know, you guys are describing kind of the vibe or the way that the personification of a band, but is there a new wave sound? The only thing that I can come up with was they're like heavy synthesizer. Is there anything else that makes a band or a song new wave versus pop?
I don't think it's just the synth. I think it has the – this was like the – I don't know. I don't really want to call it the second British invasion, but it was almost the third British invasion because the first British invasion was like, you know, the Beatles and then the heavy metal era of the 60s and 70s.
The second
generation. And then this is like the third English invasion where a lot of these bands were English or overseas.
Yeah, that's true. That was marked. And that was kind of part of the allure, I think, was that it had like a foreign feeling to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't all American apple pie, even though there was plenty of stuff going on here in the U.S., like we were saying. Blondie and the B-52s, and they were all they were Americans. The Ramones were, you know, from New York.
Right.
So what the heck? But I would agree that the synthesizers were a big deal because that really you just didn't hear that. I mean, there were keyboards out there here and there. You know, I mean, the Doors played keyboards.
Right.
But to program the music on the synthesizer and let it play these very complicated, you know, technical, you know, technotronic type of melodies and such throughout the song, I think that really marked real new wave. And it did play into pop. It did turn into the Thompson Twins and Howard Jones and, you know, Blinded Me with Science, etc. But I think that kind of is where it stepped away from anything that music had been before. And it felt very exciting at the time.
It's their signature sound, really. Like the new wave era was the signature sound was the heavy on the synthesizers.
Yeah, even if you go toward the goth side, because like you're saying, Depeche Mode was you know, had a lot of synth sound, but it definitely kind of had that muddy English vocal, you know, and that if you listen to New Order or Bauhaus or even the Smiths, they all had that kind of really. Yeah. Drag you down into the mud. So you could go, you know, from these poppy love songs all the way to, you know, music to like axe murder people by.
Right. So these UK bands that were heavy synthesizer, if they did a like upbeat poppy type of song, does that still be defined as a new wave song?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
So here, okay. I made some notes. I haven't done this in a while. I haven't done like where I made notes for a show, but I was really like, I really wanted to have some solid stuff to talk about. So I broke it down into these different subgenres. So like I mentioned the goth kind of stuff, right? And then there was like the pop music type of stuff, which would be like Duran Duran, Simple Minds, Tears for Fears, In Excess kind of falls into that category, almost a little bit of rock. And then there was like the dance genre would be like New Order or Yaz or Yazoo. I know they changed their name a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even Kaja Gugu. might fall in there.
Yeah, well, it depends on what I think your mood was at the time, whether you felt that some of that was kind of bubblegumish. I mean, I remember thinking Kaja Gugu was kind of silly.
But, oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's a catchy song.
But then you have, like, anything off the Valley Girl soundtrack is basically one of the – it kind of personifies that whole feel of the new wave movement, I think. I think it's a really good representation of what they were doing back then. Like, and that was people like the English Beat, Modern English, Psychedelic Furs. And then there was another – subgenre, like it was like borderline punk, where like missing persons kind of fell into that, you know. They were poppy, but they had, you know, the platinum hair and just kind of out there on the edge. Or even Berlin was a little bit edgy too, before they did Top Gun, you know, the Top Gun song, whatever that was. I can't remember it. And then there's, you know, just other. Then there's just other subgenres that I don't even know how to identify, like After the Fire did that song Der Kommissar, which I love that.
German, right?
Yeah, I love that song, but I don't know where I know it falls into like that whole new wave umbrella, but I don't know where it fits within the little subgenres that I was thinking about.
Yeah, it was a big kind of MTV pop song. Like, I remember hearing that at, and then you would hear, you know, Mina and, you know, 99 Luftballons and Aha. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think those were all out around the same time and vying for the same, you know, airtime on MTV. And it was fun. It was fun. And I don't know. Is it art? Is it new wave? Was that really angsty or was it just pop music? I guess you kind of have to decide what your allegiances are.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't realize, like, I didn't really ever put, like, Simple Minds or Tears for Fears into the new wave, because I thought they were more pop, you know, more of a pop rock type of sound, which I love both. They're two of my favorite bands, actually, from that era. So anyway, do you guys want to start talking about, like, your... like maybe your top three favorite songs from the era? We'll just kind of each do one and then we'll chit chat a little about each one.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Does that sound like something good? I know. Sure. I want to try to move fast. I don't want to take up too much time because I can go on tangents. I don't know if Dave told you about that.
Our tangent king.
Okay.
Which is we're in uncharted territory because he made notes.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Okay.
But we get
I had a
point.
You get notes, but I usually like to go by memory.
Yeah. So you know the he lost point for notes, but he got a point for bringing in Kaja Gugu. So we're
yeah.
And I love busting chops with Scott. So
I also mentioned one of your favorite movies of all time too.
Yeah, Valley Girl.
Yeah, which we talked about on our podcast also.
Yeah. Yep. It's a great movie. I love it. And
yeah, it is a fun movie.
When Dave and I first started doing the show together, or Dave was doing it before me, and I jumped on some point, and he mentioned that people would like give him a hard time for liking Valley Girl. I'm like, why, man? That's a great movie. Love that movie.
It is a good movie.
And I
Romeo and Juliet. It's it's classic.
Right. And I grew up.
And Susie, your mom was bitching.
Bitching.
Your mom was bitching, Susie.
Like, for sure.
For sure.
Gag me with a spoon, you know? Yeah, let's just do that for the whole show.
Okay, yeah.
And Suzanne, I also grew up in, like, when I was in high school, I was in Southern California when I was in high school.
Oh, really?
So I was very, it was everywhere around me. Like, you couldn't get away from any of this stuff. It was.
Yeah, that'd make me a little crazy.
Yeah.
Although I came from New York, you got to be.
Well, yeah, no, those were two.
Oh my God!
Two much different worlds, right there.
Two different worlds, but you know, they had such great personality for the era too. You know, there's so much great stuff going on in those two ends of the world. The, you know, the punk scene coming out of New York was awesome at the time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys had a lot of fun. And I mean, I was around the long hair metal bands all over town, you know. I mean, I was in Orange County, so it wasn't too far from going up to Hollywood and hitting Whiskey. I never went to the Whiskey myself, but did hit Sunset Boulevard a few times. Yeah, I never went to Whiskey Go-Go. I really wish I would have gone just to have been able to go on. I don't care who I would have seen, but, you know, just to have been there. So anyway, yeah, it's just it's a great movie, and it really I feel like it kind of wraps up that whole feel of the new wave movement, you know.
And just to kind of wrap that up a little bit, Suzanne, what had happened was, we started talking about, you know, kind of like a follow-up conversation with you, and I had mentioned, you know, your taste in music, and then I knew Scott, you know, being really into 80s music, and I was like, well, and I got to the point where I was like, I really don't know if I've got a lot to contribute here. His advice to me: go listen to the Valley Girl soundtrack. You'll be all right.
Go watch it.
Or watch it.
You'll be all right.
That works. But see, what was going on there in that film is that she was from the Valley and she liked all that kind of poppy, you know, Men at Work and stuff that was playing at that party at the beginning. And right. He was kind of the rough and tumble, more, you know, punk underground type of 80s music. Now, like, I listened to both ends of that spectrum. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really see too much of a distinction there. Did you feel like, you know, those different sanctions were kind of at war? I felt more it was like heavy metal against new wave. I didn't necessarily feel it was, you know, pop music against, you know, more of that underground stuff.
You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that. I really felt a similar I felt that similar tension back then. I always wondered, like, there was some rift between like the metalheads and the punks too that I didn't understand. I'm like, you guys, you know, there's a lot of anger in all of our songs. Mm-hmm. it's just a bunch of teenage angst, and I don't understand why the punks and the metalheads can't get along.
Yeah, it's true. You get very snobby about your choice of music. At the time, it was just like, that's the ruler that you measured everything against. Whether somebody liked, you know, David Bowie and the Psychedelic Furs, then they could be your friend, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. And you hung out with those people. I mean, although I was a little bit eclectic as far as my cliques. I would hang out with some jocks. I would hang out with the metalheads. I would hang out with some of the geeks. I was kind of bouncing around. I always had a lot of friends, so it's but you do typically lean towards the people that you listen to music with, especially in your formative teenage years when you're starting to understand music and it's really starting to understanding the lyrics and you're going, oh, I get it now, you know.
That's so, like tribal.
Oh yeah. It's great stuff. And
I always got the vibe that punk was more anti-establishment and metal was just like, you know, here I am, deal with it.
Okay.
That's so that was kind of the how I felt about the two genres. And even when we were talking about Valley Girl, you know, the punk rock was, you know, the Nick Cage character. Mm-hmm. He was so into just being different. They didn't want to conform.
Yeah, and his buddy, whose favorite color was magenta.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. It was a very nonconformist movement, I think. It was pretty much, we're staking out our territory here, and nobody's made music like this before. And we just got to brand that whole, and claim a whole genre that just didn't exist before. Just the whole the techno music and the...
Yeah, it really was the beginning of electronic music, really.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it'd go on forever. I don't know about you guys. Like, grunge came in, I was like, what the heck is happening? I thought this was just gonna, you know, like you usher in something new, like electronic music and synthesizers and such. How could that ever go out of style? You know, it's out there. But
yeah, well, now
it's kind of rebounded.
I think it has kind of rebounded and it's become a different thing. You know, now they call it house music mostly, and that's like all the synth stuff. I know I've never really been into house music, and now I'm listening to a channel on satellite radio called Chill Radio or something like that, Chill Wave, and it's a lot of synth stuff, but they call it like deep house music. I'm like, okay, I didn't know I like house music, but I love this channel, and it's got a lot of really cool stuff, like other channels that I listen to on like Pandora is like Chill Wave Radio or Chill Out Radio, and they have a lot of that heavy synthesizer stuff and a lot of sampling too. You know, like so many of the rap bands that use sampling of old songs that we used to have when we heard them for the first time back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I know. It's so derivative, though. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to sidetrack real quick for a second.
Tangent.
And this band just popped into my head, and I don't know why it didn't pop into my head earlier, because it's really one of my favorites from then. Where would you put Oingo Boingo in this category,
Suzanne? Oingo Boingo was cool. They were very creative. Now, which category are we talking about? Because we've run down like seven of them.
Oh, well, like just like in the new wave, general new wave.
Definitely. Yeah. That was definitely new wave. It was weird. It was, and that's Danny Elfman, right? We're all familiar with mm-hmm. where he went.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he sold out, but he made for some fun soundtrack. But I mean, I didn't listen to a ton of Oingo Boingo at the time, but it was weird. Like, I liked things being weird. I liked knowing that you could take the music somewhere kind of strange mm-hmm. and still get away with it, you know? Like, it made me feel free to listen to something like that. But, you know, here and there they had a poppy song or, you know, a video that was on MTV. And, you know, as strange as he was, a kind of tall beanpole, you know, redhead type. Not like your typical goth lead singer, I guess. But, you know, it was fun to watch, and it was just not always lyrical. You know, it's just I like that. I like that it could go anywhere. It would surprise you.
I think that's one of the main points of like the whole new wave movement was that we can do whatever we want because we're just experimenting and having fun.
Exactly.
And that's really what made it interesting, because you never knew what was coming up next. You know, I mean, the hairstyles alone. You know, the singer from Flock of Seagulls. I mean, that's an iconic hairstyle just because of that one video, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bizarre, and it only got worse from there.
Yeah. Or like, you know, the big bangs, like gigantic bangs, but then they were short. Like the girls had them like kind of short and curly in the back, but they had like this big bouffant thing going on, like in the Thompson Twins, like, I don't know her name. I don't see. That's the thing.
Somebody.
Yeah. I really don't know like depth of any of these bands, mm-hmm. like the names of the singers and I would say guitarist because I'm a heavy metal guy, but even that, you know, I don't know. So anyway, well, do you guys want to jump into the song pick?
The song.
Let's go for it.
So I mentioned before that we'd probably kind of run down three songs of our favorites. And Suzanne, you want to talk about one of your favorites? Or it doesn't have to be like a favorite song, just a song that jumped out at you.
It was hard. It's hard to narrow it down because there are just so many.
It really
is. As far as the songs that really like grabbed me and kind of changed the way I went about my life, I think mm-hmm. you mentioned that Flock of Seagulls album. Mm-hmm. That's the song Telecommunications.
Like
I think I played it so many times that my brother threatened that if I played it one more time, he'd come in the middle of the night and, you know, and kill me. But I don't know. It was space age. It was weird. There was so much reverb. Like it was like they were in some cavernous out of the atmosphere. Like you couldn't tell what the heck was going on. It was that whole album and the way that the synth. The way that the synthesizers really drove the whole narrative of what was going on in that album, I think, really kind of changed my idea of what music could be.
Well, that's cool. That's a cool pick because I like wouldn't have guessed that one.
Really?
But, yeah, I don't know that song. Like I
you don't know
I,
that song.
No, all I right. I don't really know that album. I'm gonna tell you. I'll be honest right now.
Oh my god.
Because I'm. Remember earlier I said I wasn't really into the new wave then, mm-hmm. but I've grown to appreciate it more now, you know? I haven't really been able to explore the deeper tracks of a lot of these albums. I just know what I know. Like, I know what I heard back then, and it's coming back to mm-hmm. me as something, as a great memory part of it. So I haven't had a chance to really dig in. So I'm glad that you're mentioning certain songs that maybe I haven't heard or that I don't know of, that I'm taking notes also to go
well,
and do homework. So I do
okay,
that. I do
okay.
that kind of thing.
I guess I could have said Iran because that really was the song that that made it to the radio and everybody started listening to that album.
Yeah, that was top 40 definitely all the way.
And
yeah.
I absolutely love that song. It's still one of my favorites. And I liked that song back then, but that's mm-hmm. one of my favorites by far.
Telecommunications, so, I think more was it was a little more sparse. Mm-hmm. A little less pop and just kind of this jagged, well, I don't want to spoil it for you, but this kind of jagged type of telecommunication going, like it was almost like musical Morse code practically. Mm-hmm. And I liked the way you could kind of make a song out of anything. It didn't have to have a guitar solo. It didn't have to have real drums. They were all electronic and they sounded like it, you know, they sounded like it was all being pumped out of a machine somewhere, which was
right.
new. It was bizarre. So,
and this is all the DJs of today. This is all they work with now. Like,
yeah,
they take all that, they sample all that stuff from back then that was new electronic stuff, and they use it over and over again. So, anyway, great song pick as far as the group goes. I'm going to listen to it once I get done here. So if you bring more new ones, I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, Dave, do you know anything about that song?
I don't, but just the way that Suzanne's describing it, it reminded me of what Timbuk3 brought to the table, where you know, yeah, where they, you know, those guys were, you know, they would mix the music and play it on a radio and then perform it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's what I'm thinking of, and I don't know if it's close or not to this song, but that's what comes to mind.
Timbuk3. I'm trying to remember which song.
Future So Bright.
I gotta wear shades. Yep. Yeah, I remember that one. Okay. Yep. That was a little later.
Yeah, it was.
Late 80s, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
say,
that 80, early.
87, 88.
Yeah, and that was a little bit more like, that was a little bit more, I think they were, I felt like those two were kind of smug, you know? Like, you know, like, look at how cool I am. If you remember that narrative,
yeah.
That future's so bright, I gotta wear shades.
Well, you know, I had a chance to talk to the lead singer, Pat McDonald, and that song has actually been taken out of context ever since it became popular. It's really, it's a dire look at the future of, you know, we're gonna die. You know, we're gonna have a nuclear war.
The Cold War era.
Yeah. Mm. So that's really what that song was about, but everybody's taking it out of context because it's like, you know, it's been used as, you know, from a political movement, you know, any kind of politician says, hey, I'm going to throw this song out because it's got this message, the future's so bright. But that's not what it's saying at all, or the meaning behind it.
It was kind of dark, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that was the year I graduated college that song came out. And, you know, to me, it was kind of like the graduation song.
Oh, yeah. I could see where it would be taken that way, because it does sound fun, you know. It's a fun upbeat song, so you wouldn't think to read between the lines too much. Dave, do you want to go next? Do you have a song you want to talk about?
Yeah, actually, you know, the one that I picked for the first one to bring up, very autobiographical for me. It's a song that I loved as a kid, and it's one of those that once I had the album, I would pester. I went to a family reunion in Washington State, and we had like 50th anniversary of my grandparents' wedding at that point. And this was in the 80s, obviously. And I had the album Madness, and I love the song Our House. I could not get enough of this song, and I think to the chagrin of all of my aunts, uncles, cousins, who must have gotten tired of me wanting to constantly hear Our House by Madness, and I still love that song. If it comes on now, I'm singing along every word. So to me, it's held up. It's just such a fun song, and a lot of what you guys are talking about with the UK influence of New Wave – These guys were there. You know, that was their wheelhouse. So I had explored some of the other songs, and I'm trying to remember the track names. But Our House always stands out in my brain because it was one that I had played so much as a kid.
That was a fun song.
It is a fun song. And that you kind of bring up what I didn't even think about Madness, but you know what else that kind of opens up a whole nother subgenre that I missed from my earlier list is ska came out of this whole movement too. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Even the Police were a little on the ska side there in the beginning when they first came out. It's kind of neat.
Right. With like the almost the reggae sound and stuff.
Yeah. They're Regatta de Blanc and yeah.
Now Our House Madness, is that actually New Wave, or am I misclassifying things?
No, you know what? I would say it falls into that English movement of that era. It definitely. Yeah. I would call it a New Wave song, but it definitely has the ska sound that it developed later on. You know, with Fishbone and all that.
Yeah, UB40 maybe.
That's yeah, UB40, kind of a reggae.
It's got
reggae
the same kind of sound as UB40, definitely. Red Red Wine comes to mind.
So I have a little story about this song, actually, that you mentioned.
Our House?
Yes,
you do? Okay.
I do. I'm surprised that you said it. So I have a younger brother. He's 5 years younger than me. Him and his wife are expecting number 14 in November. And their yes. kids, yeah, I know. You're like, holy crap. Sort of,
damn, here.
Better woman than me.
So they've adopted three, so they'll be on a number 11 of their own. But anyway, a couple years ago, their kids are very musical. So my brother's name is Aaron. His wife's name is Aaron. Kind of odd. His wife, you know, decided to get all their kids into stringed instruments, and so they play everything from the cello down to the viola, right, along with guitars thrown in there every once in a while too. But they are just musical. They just love music. They all love it. They did a short video that I don't know if they ever finished it or published it, but they did a video with, like, it was probably about 8 of the kids singing Our House. Like, they weren't singing it, they were lip syncing to the song. and they were like doing this, they were doing like crazy cuts with editing, and one kid, Bennett, he's kind of in the middle of the pack. He was like the lead singer, you know, he was taking on the lead vocals and lip syncing to the song. And it's so much fun. And I was just there visiting a couple weeks ago when we drove back from Chicago, and they said, yeah, we never finished the video and we want to do it sometime. So,
they should definitely do it.
I know. And it would be, you know, it would get a
bunch. Can I be in it? I'll come over and say
it. I'm sure it would be one of those.
That sounds like so much fun.
It would be one of those things that go viral just because there's, you know, it's all their own kids. You know, they're all brothers and sisters, and it's just, it'd be fun. So anyway, that's my story about our house in the middle of our street.
Very cool. See, I should have had 11 kids and, you know, birthed my own video studio.
It's amazing. They do like weddings, and they're.
That is great.
They're setting aside money for college because, God, that many kids. How are you?
Oh yeah, well, there's
college?
A problem, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But
wow,
the oldest one just got married. Their oldest just got married, and he had a scholarship, like a full ride, to Austin Peay University down in Tennessee, and he is a cellist. He was a cellist in an orchestra for a while. So, and then he got into computer programming. So anyway, that's my story.
There you go.
So, man, time flies. Look at it. It's 10 to 9 here already.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're not done yet.
Okay. You still got some time, Suzanne?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Just cut us off at any point, and we can always continue the conversation some other time if we have to. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to jump in and go with, Ghost in You by the Psychedelic Furs.
Oh, yeah.
A man in my shoes runs a light, and all the papers light tonight, but falling over you is the news of the day.
Story behind this song and behind the Psychedelic Furs, I really did not appreciate them or understand what they were. I just didn't appreciate the music back when I was in high school. But, you know, years and years later, my wife and I used to live in the Chicago area, not too far from Dave, and there's a summer fest every year in Milwaukee that you would go to, and they have all these bands playing on free stages, and then they would have like the main venue where you would pay to go and see somebody. Like we went and saw Tom Petty one year for for the main stage. But then they have, you know, you just kind of walk around Summerfest. There's food vendors and beer and all that stuff, and then there's all these little stages where people come and play, and that's the free part of it. Like I saw Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and even Ted Nugent played at one of the free stages one time. But we went and sat down, and the Psychedelic Furs came out, and from the time they started to the time we left, you know, till they were done, and they just did a short set, probably like 8 or 10 songs, something. I was like, oh my God, I'm having flashbacks of high school, and just, it's just bringing me right back. And ever since then, I'm like, I love Ghost in You, Love My Way. Maybe not so much Pretty in Pink, but just because, I don't know, it wasn't that great. It didn't, that song never got to me. But stuff like that, oh, it's just so awesome. I love Psychedelic Furs. But this song, Ghost in You, is just so cool. I just love the way
it's
sounds.
Haunting.
It is. And it's
aptly named.
I think it's that it's that lost love, you know, kind of kind of a feel. The maybe even the one that got away.
Aww. I don't know. Very sentimental.
Yeah, it's just and I,
new
you know,
wave song. I'm, yeah, lots of longing.
There's a lot of love songs in new wave.
You know, you're right. There are. I shouldn't say that. There absolutely are.
No, there's a lot. I didn't realize it until I started listening to it. And this last week, I've been binging it because I've been looking forward to this conversation. So I've been binging the new wave move. You know, the whole new wave stations on Pandora. So I've had a lot of flashbacks. Like today, I heard Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo. That's kind of what made me think of Oingo Boingo.
Huh.
Anyway. So Ghost in You, you obviously know that one, Suzanne. Do you know that
one,
Dave?
Yeah, I love it.
I'm not familiar with it.
Go check it out. It's a good song.
Oh, yeah, please. I saw the Psychedelic Furs in college.
Yeah, it was a great show, too. I was, like, really impressed with how well they put it together. And this was, you know, in probably about, let's see, 2007? 2008, maybe? Somewhere around there. So this is after their careers of, you know, gone by the wayside, but yeah.
Yeah, I think they had a couple of tours going on recently. They're, you know, doing the reunion type of tour.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, the clips that I've seen from my friends on Facebook, Richard Butler is still sounding pretty good.
Mm-hmm. He blew me away. I could not believe the quality of his vocals. Like it. There you go.
There you go. You Dave hear it?
Jamming it. Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It sounds familiar to me now.
Yeah. And see, Dave, you said you don't really know. Like, you didn't know.
I don't know. I don't know the name of the songs, but I know these songs.
You know it.
You will recognize. Yeah. You'll recognize a ton of these songs.
And by the way, Scott, your Google Mini that you gave me, that's what's helping us here.
Awesome.
Yeah, and what you gotta love, you were talking about the English invasion. Mm-hmm. You could hear everybody's accent when they sang.
Isn't that bizarre?
You know, it was just this small spate of history when you could actually hear people's English accents when they sang. Like, you can't, otherwise out there, you know, people are singing, you can't hear where they're from. It never came through. But I think this was more, I don't know, music and people just like walked off the street and started singing and they had their very heavy colloquial accents and you could hear it.
Yeah, they let them come through.
Like, yeah, it was great.
Like you look at, and I know I keep jumping back to the metal, heavy metal and hard rock stuff, but you think about that a lot of those bands, Judas Priest, you would never know by listening to the songs that they were English or from that part of the world. Or the Scorpions from Germany. How could you ever decipher
that? Yeah, or anybody.
Yeah.
Stones or Led Zeppelin. Like, you don't hear their accents when they sing.
You do not hear their accents when they sing. You're absolutely right. And that always blew my mind. And then this, a lot of the new wave bands, they let it happen. They just let the English voice come out. And I kind of like that about that.
Loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And I even heard, I remember hearing back in the day that the guys from Ministry, who were, I think, from Chicago, were singing with fake English accents to make it sound more, you know, like they were part of that whole invasion, let's say. So, now don't quote me. They're probably going to call me up now.
I think Madonna tried that, too.
I don't like Madonna.
I'm not a big fan either. Yeah.
Her earliest stuff.
Madonna is not new wave.
No, Madonna is not new wave. That is pop music all the way.
There goes. Now I got to remove that 40. One from my list.
Okay.
No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Scratch that one off. All right. Suzanne, you want to take another pick real quick?
Another pick. Okay, wait. I have to go back now because I wrote them down. All right. We already talked about Tears for Fears, so maybe I'll let that one wait. But I think I was obsessed with the Police. Now that I know it, and don't just think. It's hard to pick a song. I mean, Synchronicity was an amazing album, probably one of the best of the decade. But if I had to pick a song, I think Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic is just the coolest song I think I've ever heard. I mean, maybe other than the Beatles, because, you know, they're amazing. But if we stick to the 80s, Every Little Thing She Does is Magic is just an amazing song. The keyboards in it are amazing. Just the band in itself, the fact that, you know, Sting is a bass player, which is usually an in-the-background guy.
Right.
But these were his songs. These were amazing bass lines. And he just broke out there with just, I mean, the song, it's, I think the song itself, that is just a magic song. It's.
Is that, that's the video super. Where they're, that's the video where they're in the music studio and.
Yeah, it's a video.
In front of the mixing board, right?
Yeah, and they're jumping around and they're whacking each other with drumsticks.
I have so many good memories of that. Like, that's just, that was such a great era, the beginning of MTV.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe, was that Ghost in the Machine? I think that was Ghost in the Machine.
It could have been, yes.
Or maybe Zenyatta Mandata. I'd have to look that up. But to me, those were some of the first New Wave albums that I bought were the Police albums. Those are semi-early Police albums. I know there were others that were earlier than that. But that is just, that song, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, you know, and it was such a popular song at the time, too. I mean, that thing was in heavy rotation on MTV. Heavy rotation.
You know, I think that was, I didn't get MTV when I until I went to college because they hadn't put it in my neighborhood. So I think I missed the video until, you know, I saw it much later.
Right.
I just listened to this. I just ran out and got the albums and listened to the songs.
So from 1982 till like 1987, like that was the only thing that I watched was MTV.
That was from Ghost in the Machine. I'm confirming. But yeah, it's funny how when MTV came out,
Dave, turn it down, man.
That is beautiful.
No, that's awesome. And that song, that's got a lot of good memories. I can picture where I was consistently watching that video. I was always over at a friend's, this guy Mark, and we used to play with remote control cars, and we would sit there and fix our remote control cars because he would race them like, you know, really get into the racing part of it, go to tracks and actually races and win prizes and whatever. But we would sit there and fix the cars after the races and watch MTV. And that was one of the videos that I just remember seeing over and over again. So yeah, that's a great pick. Great pick.
The song I always remember is Don't Stand So Close to Me. Love that song.
That's a good one too.
Until they did the reprise.
Oh, no, that one was kind of watered down, don't you think?
I didn't like the new one.
What? Yeah, why screw it?
I don't get that. I don't know why would you redo something that was such a great song from the beginning?
I don't know. It's got to be a marketing thing. They were trying to sell because that was on like a compilation, like a best of that they did. So maybe they wanted to pull in one of the more popular songs so everybody could, you know, buy the record and say, oh, did you hear the remake?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm trying to keep the conversation moving here, Dave. What's your next pick, real quick?
Well, this one's going to be a shout out to my prom in senior year 1989. Mm-hmm. There was a girl I didn't have the guts to ask anybody out, but I worked at a grocery store, and what had happened was I was at the table at prom with all the people that I worked with. And there was a girl that I had this great crush on, Lisa, Not to be confused with Lisa from Weird Science. I didn't make her on my computer.
You don't even have a license, Lisa.
Yeah, I didn't make Lisa on my computer. And yeah, there's no Weird Science going on. But, you know, Senior Prom, she says to me, you know, yeah, I'll dance with you, but I don't want to dance any fast songs. I just want to dance slow songs. And the one song that I remember that they played, and, you know, it's like kind of a really cool moment for me because I had this crush on her, was Spandau Ballet's True.
Oh, wow.
See, that was a really romantic song.
It's iconic. Yeah. It's like, and it's iconic of that era, too. It really is.
Absolutely. It is.
So true, funny how it seems, always in time, but never in line for dreams. Head over heels, went toe to toe. This is the sound of my soul. This is the sound.
Of course, you know, prom 1989, of course, they're still playing it.
Yeah.
And I forget what year it was released. I think it was mid-80s.
I was going to say like 84.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So.
84, 85, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I think so. 84 sounds right. That was kind of my middle of my college years. Mm. We used to, if you remember the record players that we had an older one that one of my roommates owned that had the arm that would, you know, go across so you could stack a couple of albums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah.
We would put on that album and Joe Jackson's Night and Day let that play. And we would all go to sleep and just have that playing in the background.
And, that is great background music.
Yeah. It was nice. Yeah. It was nice.
Joe Jackson. I love the name drop on that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, Joe Jackson's fabulous.
Yeah.
Is she really going out with him?
Is she really going
out with him? I saw him in Pittsburgh last year, and he made me cry.
Really?
Yeah, he sang Different for Girls. It's Different for Girls, and I cried.
Wow. Okay, cool.
That's a great concert moment right there.
I sang with him. It was beautiful.
I've never been to a concert that made me cry.
Well, I don't know. I'm get all nostalgic and emotional, I guess. But
I definitely find myself having more emotional ties to music nowadays. Like that, really, like songs that truly move me from back then. That I'm like, man. Just so many things tied to each song. So yeah, that's a great moment though. So are you guys ready for my next pick?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Let's hear it.
I'm gonna go with Alive and Kickin' by Simple Minds.
Oh, good one.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Good one.
You lift me up. Don't you ever stop? Now it's all or nothing, 'cause you said you follow through. You follow me, and I follow you.
What is you gonna do when you can't see it all? What is you gonna do when it all cracks up? What is you gonna do when nothing's done? What is you gonna do when the flames blow up? Who cares on the ground when it's time to die? What is it gonna take
to make a dream survive?
Who's got the
to come a storm inside.
I'm just gonna see you.
Alive and kicking. Stay until your love is. Alive and kicking.
I just love the Simple Minds, and a lot of people take the Simple Minds and they just say, oh yeah, Don't You Forget About Me from Breakfast Club. You know, it's the one that, you know, kind of put them on the map, if you will. But they have so many great songs that did get some radio play. Obviously Alive and Kicking got quite a bit of radio play and MTV rotation, but that song still to this day, I can crank it up. And my wife too, it's like one of her favorite songs, and she's not like a new wave person at all. She didn't like any of that. She really was not into any of that, but she's like, I love Simple Minds and NXS. So, but yeah, that's, I just love that song.
Yeah, they were fun. And I think they were kind of like dueling bands, NXS and Simple Minds. They had kind of a similar aesthetic.
They have a very similar sound. Like, we listened to them. Chrissy and I were kind of, because I was talking about what we were going to, you know, I was talking about how we're going to talk about this topic on the podcast. I'm like, oh, yeah. So we brought up, you know, Simple Minds. And she woke up the other day and she's like, you know what song I need to hear right now? It's in my head. I need to hear Alive and Kicking. And so I put it on the iPad. And are you listening to it, Dave?
I turned down the volume a little bit, yeah. So it wasn't so intrusive, but yeah, if you take a breath for a moment, then you can hear it.
I think when we edit this down, we should drop in some clips of the songs.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So anyway, that was my second pick. You want to, we should probably move on to Suzanne's third pick real quick.
Third pick. Okay. All right. I'm maybe gonna throw in a Pretenders song because we've been talking about all guy songs.
Oh man, that's a good. Go ahead. Go with Pretenders.
All right. I guess I might have to say Talk of the Town. Once again, hard to choose.
Such a drag to want something sometime. One thing leads to another. I know. Was a time I wanted you for mine. Nobody knew. You arrived like a day, just like a cloud. I made a wish, I said it out loud. Out loud in a crowd. Everybody heard. Was the talk of the town. It's not my place to know what you feel. I'd like to know, but why should I? Who are you then? Who are you now? Well, common labor by night, by day highbrow. Back in my room, I wonder that I sit on the bed, look at the sky. Up in the sky. Talk of the town.
Chrissy Hynde just kicks ass. She's just a goddess. And I don't think she gets as much credit. Like, everybody, when they think back on the 80s, the first person they think of is Deborah Harry. But
true.
I don't know. I think Chrissy Hynde was a lot grittier and crazier and... She played guitar, you know, like she played this stuff. She wrote this stuff. Debbie Harry was very cool and very, you know, had that really neat ethereal voice. But Chrissy Hynde was out there making things happen and in the band with the guys, you know, playing the instruments and writing the songs. So you gotta love, Talk of the Town. And she's got this really cool, you know, slow vibrato to her voice that is really hard to imitate and just really... unique and atmospheric, I think. So, you know, maybe tomorrow, maybe someday.
So I really love your description as grittier. Like that's so true. She's, and I really like her sound. She is very unique. I think one thing that I really like about her and the Pretenders and the way they present their music, like, their songs are really, they're really good at storytelling. Like, they're really good at putting you in a place. Like, setting it up and making you feel like you understand what they're the storyline that they're going with, and it's not just fluff. Yeah, I agree. I think they're an underrated band. Like, they were kind of, you know, they almost seem like they were kind of a flash in the pan in the 80s, but really they're really good. I really like, I love Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders. It's an amazing, amazing band, and this is a really good pick.
Right. I think they're kind of defining. And like you said, not the first thing that people think of, because they were a little bit more underground, playing at the clubs as opposed to MTV. You know, you don't think of a Pretenders video when you think of MTV. Maybe I could think of a couple, but not much. You know, they were not splashed all over the place.
Right.
They were more like, if you listen to the Pretenders, they were kind of yours. They weren't everybody's.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, too. That's like, if you're a Pretenders fan, and I really wasn't like back then. I appreciate, like I said before, I appreciate a lot of this stuff so much more as I'm getting older. But looking back at it, if you were a Pretenders fan, it was a much more personal relationship with the band. You know, like you were just much more like into that thing, and it just had a certain feel about it. It's really cool. Yeah. Anyway. Great pick. Dave, do you have anything on this one?
No, I was just going to go back to the comment where, you know, the first thing you think is Debbie Harry or Blondie, and for me, it's Joan Jett.
Now that's not even gritty. That's crunchy, my friend.
Yeah, that is very crunchy. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, yeah, as far as, like, Pretenders, I don't remember getting into them as much. I mean, I think I liked their – you know, the releases that was like top 40, but I never really dug deep into kind of what they provided.
Like Brass in Pocket?
Mm-hmm.
Brass in Pocket. I'm not thinking of that one.
You would totally know it if you heard it. Just put it on your little Google thingy there.
Yeah. My Google thing? Brass in Pocket?
You got Brass in Pocket.
All right. Brass.
You'll know it.
Yeah, you'll
recognize. Yeah, we got Brass Monkey. I guess you don't want that one.
Not Brass Monkey.
I'm still not sure what it means. I heard there's some kind of slang in.
Oh yeah.
You live in England. You know that Brass in Pocket means something. There you go. I'm gonna use it.
Oh yeah, this song's awesome.
Yep. Make you notice.
Sorry, I can't help. I sing along. Yeah. I can't help it.
So, like, and I only bring up that song because I think a lot of people just know it, but they don't know the name of it, you know?
Right. Absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's true.
As soon as I start heard it began, I was like, oh, yeah, of course I know this song, but I never knew the name of it. You're right.
Hey, Suzanne, what's the Ohio song? A-O, Way to Go, Ohio. Back I can't remember. Ohio. What's the name of this? Is it just called Back to Ohio?
I don't think it is. What is it called? I think it's called City is Gone.
Yeah, that's it. My City
my
is
City
Gone.
Was
my
gone. City was gone. Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and as far as telling a story, that's a great one.
Yes, absolutely. That was the song that came to mind when I was saying, you know, they tell this story. And so this great band to pick, not just the song that you mentioned, but
My City Was Gone. It's called.
Yeah. That's great.
But I think everybody just calls it Back to Ohio.
Yeah, going back to Ohio. All right, so that would be Dave. I think you're up.
No, I'm sorry. My City Was Gone just started, so I wanted to see what that was about.
Great bass line.
Isn't it?
You hear it? See, that's all you hear in the song in the beginning.
I went back to Ohio.
I'm not familiar with this one.
Oh, come on. Wait for it. Wait for it, Dave.
So far, I don't have it.
That's great.
No, I got nothing on this.
Yeah, well, once again, these songs were not all over the radio. You had to kind of search for them.
True. That is true.
I had a roommate who just adored the Pretenders, and she played me all the music, and that was that. That was all I needed.
My next pick.
Third pick. Final pick.
Third pick. This one, I became to appreciate it after, like, you know, I started getting the resurgence of appreciation for John Hughes movies. Mm-hmm. I've always had a love for John Hughes movies, obviously, you know, being a fan of the 80s. But there was one that has elevated itself past the pack, and I almost, in my mind, I have put it above, you know, the other 80 other John Hughes movies. And this is above Breakfast Club. This is above Ferris Bueller. And a lot of people disagree with me.
Mr. Carter, can I guess?
Go ahead.
Is it Some Kind of Wonderful?
Yes, it is. Very good. And when you told me, you said, you know, you gave me a little bit of homework. You said, before we start, you know, go back and listen to Valley Girl. And I was like, well, now hold on a minute. I know there was some new wave stuff happening on the Some Kind of Wonderful soundtrack. So I actually went back and started listening to that. And if anybody that has heard me in the past knows that I have this, what do you call it? Crush, affinity, just love affair.
Infatuation
with Leah Thompson.
Yeah. Amanda Jones.
If only she would return my calls.
Maybe she'll be a guest on the show.
Who knows? But on the soundtrack, there is Miss Amanda Jones, and the band that plays it is called the March Violets. There's a lot of times that, you know, we've discovered and we've talked about that, you know, when you're looking at movies, you get the sequence of the movie kind of just intertwined with what's going on, you know, the actual song. So it's kind of takes over. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you think of, like the Breakfast Club. You know, Don't Forget About Me. You're thinking about Bender with his fist up in the air, you know, so you have that kind of visual representation because of the movie as to what it gave you. Miss Amanda Jones by the March Violets was when everybody was kind of preparing for the quote unquote date. And, you know, to me that, you know, that's the correlation. And I love that sequence. I love that part of the movie where, you know, everybody's kind of going forward with this whole game plan of this date, but the song is just, and I almost, and I think I saw that it was like a remake of a Rolling Stones song.
Right.
You know, so I just loved their take on it. So to me, that's my third pick.
That's I don't know the song. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the soundtrack from, I know I've heard the song, obviously.
Yeah, I sort of remember. I actually never saw that movie. Sorry.
Really?
Don't kill me.
You've never seen Some Kind of Wonderful?
No, I did not see Some Kind of Wonderful.
Really?
I don't know. I started to feel like it was a – I remember thinking that it was kind of a repeat of Pretty in Pink, just with a couple of different, you know, Brat Packers.
That's a really good take on it because it's actually the, like, kind of the other way around, I think. Like, Amanda Jones was like from the wrong side of town, but she was
the drummer,
to,
right?
No, that was Mary Stuart Masterson, which is
okay,
the one.
You
that,
can tell I haven't seen
now,
it.
Now, see, that's the one that I had the crush on.
Right. And everybody was a fan of Watts And right. so I'm kind of going against the grain.
Yeah.
Right.
And don't get me wrong.
And you're not familiar with the movie, Suzanne, so we're sorry for excluding you on this one.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And so Dave had this for a while. Dave had this thing where he would, every time he would go to Walmart or a garage sale, he would look for a copy of the DVD because he can't find it anywhere.
Right.
And he refused for the longest time to go ahead and order a copy of the DVD. He's like, no, I need to find it. And so I still look like in the bargain bin, because every once in a while you'll see like the bargain bin at Walmart, you know, you'll see the DVDs for like $3 or $5 or whatever.
I told you I bought it from Amazon, right?
I know you did, but I still have to look for it. Still have to look for it. And even if I find it, I probably won't buy it for you, but I'll at least take a picture and send it to you, because I still hunt for it. Like we happen to be near a garage sale, and Christy and I were like, well, let's go check it out. So we went over and they had a box of DVDs. I'm like, oh, if they have some kind of wonderful. So it's like a mission now that Dave has like kind of put into my life that I didn't know I was going to have.
I challenge anybody that is listening. If you go to a flea market, you go to a thrift store where they have the DVDs for sale, the $5 bin at Walmart, you will never, ever find this movie, but you should. You should find it. It's just not there. It just doesn't. You can order it on Amazon, and that's how I got my copy. But that was cheating. I wanted to find it in the wild.
And for
the thing is, it didn't exist in the wild at the time. There were no DVDs.
But this is just recently. Like, we're in the hunt, like in the last couple years since we started the podcast. We've been hunting for this, you know, a used copy or just some, you know, because sometimes they'll just throw out random throwback movies. Like, I saw at Walmart not too long ago, I saw The Great Outdoors.
Right.
In the bin, you know, in the special bin. And so, you know, I already own The Great Outdoors, but it just reminds me that, you know, they still bring back those older ones every once in a while and throw them in there. So anyway, if you're ever out there and you ever see it anywhere, just take a picture of it and send it to us, please.
Okay. And where you found it.
Yeah.
Okay, forget it. I'll buy it and send it to you. Just
okay.
If that's not cheating. But, you know, who knows? Can't find anything physically anywhere anymore. It's everything is streamed.
Yeah. On Amazon.
And I don't know. I mean, what you said earlier, I mean, I feel – you know, it's better than Pretty in Pink, but I mean, that's my opinion, right? So
yeah, I remember hearing that, and so I took the advice and I didn't go see it at the time, and it just never came up.
Okay, yeah, it, like I said, it's probably maybe the most underrated of what John Hughes gave us, because everything, I mean, compared to Breakfast Club or Ferris Bueller, I mean, It's not those movies, but, you know, it had its own sensibility about it. And to me, it was just, I don't know, just more endearing. It just really connected with me in some way. So to me, it elevates the story and elevates the movie. And it was just really well done.
How many times have you seen it, Dave, before you bought the DVD?
Maybe three or four.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah,
I've seen it probably three or four. Like I've sat down and like I saw it on either Netflix or Amazon. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna sit down and watch this.
Right.
You know. So anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
Now for somebody,
did you do a third pick or?
No, I'm about to. I'm about to.
Okay.
It's my turn for the last. This will be the last one. Except for maybe a couple honorable mentions that I have to mention. I can't hold back.
Okay. Well, I'm hanging in, guys. I know it's
getting... Okay. I'm so sorry. I don't mind going till 10 o'clock because that I'm used to that. I'm always the latest. You know, when it was Dave and then Rose is on the Pacific Coast. So that she's 3 hours behind us. So, you know, she was it's still only 6 o'clock in her time zone when we were doing this stuff.
Yeah, she was just getting done with dinner or something.
Yeah, she was just wrapping
making
up dinner.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was always ready to go till 10 or whatever it is. Anyway, so I'm going to go with my last pick as from Tears for Fears. And it's Laid So Low, or in parentheses, it's called Tears Roll Down.
To the bone, down too low. Got fed on tea and sympathy.
Song just kicks ass. If you guys don't know it, look it up. It's a great freaking song. I love it. I love Tears for Fears. I like a lot of their other stuff. It's just really they fall into that category, and they have some nice rock influence on a few of their songs. But yeah, this Laid So Low. It doesn't really, you don't know it until you listen to it. You might recognize it.
Yeah, I guess so, not. It's not on Songs from the Big Chair, correct? Because I know I listened to that a million
No, it's
times.
It's on Sowing the Seeds of Love.
I had that cassette. Okay, right. So which is now? I know once I hear it, I will recognize it because I did have that.
I'm pretty sure it's on. I think it's on that album. I have, you know, like some kind of a greatest hits or something. But Sowing the Seeds of Love, that's another great song.
Yeah, that is. Tears for Fears, I'm going to have to agree. I think that they made the decade. They were so iconic. That Songs from the Big Chair album came out like right smack in the middle of the decade and just like cemented this genre of music. You know, it was perfect.
Yeah.
That was a perfect album.
I absolutely love Tears for Fears. There's just so many great songs from them. Change is a great song.
Absolutely.
Pale Shelter is amazing. That's just awesome. But Laid So Low, it's kind of a hidden track, kind of a deep track on for most people. Most people don't know it, but it really is a rocking song.
Hey, wait, I'm playing in the background.
Did you say Tears Roll Down?
It's called Laid.
Hear it?
No, I can't hear it.
No, I'm not playing it, but I was just looking for it.
No, Suzanne's playing it on her. She's probably hearing it on. She probably.
Yeah, I hear it in my headset.
Yeah, I can't hear it.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll play it later.
Actually, Dave, can you pull it up real quick?
Is it Tears Roll Down?
It is, but that's the. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love everything that they do, even if I don't recognize this one off the top of my head.
The opening is a little bit, it's not once it gets going, you into the lyrics, you might recognize it.
Yeah, doesn't.
That's not it. That's not it.
That's not it.
Wait, maybe I can barely hear it.
Well, you told me to turn it down, so I turned it down. No.
That like sounds like a remix or something.
No? Okay.
No,
it looks like it's on the Seeds of Love album.
It is Seeds of Love album, I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's where I'm at.
Cool album. Was that the one, Break It Down? I think there was a song called Break It Down that I thought was
Break
really, really
it
cool.
Down yeah. Again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know that one very well.
Yeah, and Goodnight Song. There was a couple that I really liked off of that album, too.
Yeah. Well, songs from Big Chair is what really put them over the top as far as, like, Shout and...
Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah, that song is amazing.
I wanted to rule the world. I don't know about you guys. I thought I ruled the world when I heard that, when I played that song.
You
that
do, Suzanne.
It. My
you still
life
rule the
was
world.
Starting. Oh, that is so cool. That sounds good, yeah. Maybe I'm just a control freak. I don't know.
All right, so well, that wraps up our like three top picks. I know it's hard. You know, I after looking at this genre and really digging into the music, I could almost do a breakdown like I did with the hard rock and heavy metal, where you go through every year of the 80s and just look at like two or three albums that were so influential for the decade. I really feel like I could do that with this type of music, and because it's so memorable for so many of us now. But I do have to mention a couple like honorable mentions. Like there was one song called Love Plus One by Haircut 100.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
a total one hit wonder, but that song is freaking awesome.
Yeah, is that Boy Meets Girl?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Remember, right?
And it's how's it going? I can't think of it now. It's a great song. Where do we go from here? Is it down to the lake? I fear. Yeah. So we can't. Okay.
That's
I'm sorry. We can't get through one podcast without me singing at some point.
I sing all the time.
And then another great song was In Excess, The One Thing. Just such a great song.
Oh, yeah. Anyway,
so, anyway, do you guys have
I'm loving all those picks.
Yeah. Anyway, do you guys want to wrap it up? Are you ready to roll?
Okay.
All right. I know we could go on and on about this. I know.
True.
I could go on and on. You want to do another one? We can.
Yeah, sure.
We could jump into another a whole nother episode another time. That would be awesome. Or if you want to, or if you have another pick right now, we could do with that too.
Well, no, we could go down all the influential albums.
Okay, I like that. We'd love to have you back on.
Are we talking influential new wave, or are we talking just influential period?
It would be new wave. Okay. I would love to do a new wave like what I did with the heavy metal and hard rock stuff, you know, with the tape stuff that I did with Chris and Chris and Tim.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to break down that stuff. So
influential albums of new wave from the 80s.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
I was looking at some of the lists. I'm like, I know these albums. I know. I mean, I may not know the deep cuts out of them, but I know them all. I know all the song or all the artists and stuff. So it'd be fun to do. Well, that's cool. Okay. We'd love to have you back on and do it again. So,
yeah, because I'm having fun.
Cool. I'm glad we're Dave and I are really glad you're having fun.
Definitely.
That's what we're supposed to be doing, right? That's what this is just about having fun and geeking out about either music or movies or whatever. So, let's see. Wrap it up. You can find all of our podcasts at BonsaiRetroClub.com. You can email us at McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com. You can find us on Twitter at Bonsai Retro Club. Yeah, everything's Bonsai Retro Club. So do that.
Make it easy.
And Suzanne, where can we find you social media wise? And what else do you have to offer? You do a blog too, right?
Well, I have a website where I do have some blog content on there. I'm a writer. I have a couple of novels that I've got floating around out there. I have short stories and anthologies and such. I'm at SuzanneMattaboni.com. It's SUZANNE at MATTABONI.com. I have to spell it for everyone.
Yeah.
It's my whole life.
It's a mouthful. Well, I've never lived on a street where I didn't have to spell it out, so I understand.
Okay.
Every street that I've lived on has always been like some weird name that I have to like spell it out. Like right now we live on Avoca. That's A-V-O-C-A. Okay. It's like avocado with the D-O taken off. And growing up, I was on a street called Frimmel. That's F-R-I-M-L. Frimmel.
Yeah.
It's just weird names. Anyway, Dave, do you have any other credentials you want to throw out there?
No, you covered our Twitter, Tumblr, you know, mm-hmm. We've also on Facebook. So just go out there and give us a like and follow us. And of course, if you've got the Apple devices, we'd like you to subscribe to the podcast and give us a like and a review.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
Thanks, no worries. Mate, you're good.
And then if you want to follow me on Twitter too, it's 80s Auto Reverse. So.
Yeah, I'm Suze Mattaboni on Twitter, mm-hmm. And I think Suzanne Mattaboni 80s, I think, on Instagram.
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
I need to get into the Instagram thing.
I've got a whole collection of like 80s memorabilia that's saved in various of my vaults that I'm kind of been posting little by little, dribs and drabs. It's kind of fun.
Actually, you just posted that script, right?
Yes, St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, yeah, very cool.
What did you post? What was that?
I have in my possession an original script from Columbia Pictures of St. Elmo's Fire.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, because I worked at Columbia Pictures in 1986 and 87.
That's awesome.
You know, the movie was kind of a big deal at the time. I mean, I didn't think it was going to become this classic, iconic 80s film. But I liked the movie, so my boss in California sent the script over, and one of my best friends worked in the file room in the New York office, which is where I was. Mm-hmm. So we would go through and just, we could take out scripts, we could take out, videos of all the films that they made. Wow. We could look at the contract. I was like, read through contracts with, that celebrities had worked out on like whose name is going where at the beginning of the film. And it was kind of interesting.
Huh?
So yeah. I have a few scripts that I saved over the years. They're on my shelf here.
That's pretty sweet. Cause I was actually, when I was growing up out there, I really wanted to get into the production side of things as far as video and movies go, but it just never worked out my way. So I guess I didn't try hard enough. To get into that field, but it's a tough field to get into. It's especially out in Hollywood.
It's insane. It's crazy.
People are crazy out there. I really didn't like the people that were in the industry.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I didn't stay in Manhattan either. It was nuts. Yeah. It drove me crazy and I had to leave.
Yeah. There's some interesting individuals in that line of work for sure. So anyway. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this music that we love so much and the decades that we love so much. And I'm looking forward to us scheduling something to break down the albums. It's gonna be fun.
All right, sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Well, with that said, our usual sign off is be excellent to each other, and because we don't know when you're going to listen to this show, have a good whatever.
Bye-bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 Bonsai!